Spirit Radio Podcasts.
Well, following the decision on the referendum by the Irish citizens to vote to repeal the Eighth Amendment to the Irish Constitution, it wasn't long before the spotlight turned to Northern Ireland. Indeed, I saw in pictures taken on the results of the Irish referendum a giant sign saying the North is next. On the line to tell us more about the recent Supreme Court ruling on abortion law in Northern Ireland and to give us a little bit of an idea of what the current situation in regards abortion in Northern Ireland is, we've Peter Linus, who's Director of the Evangelical Alliance in Northern Ireland. Thanks for joining us on the programme, Peter. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Well, Peter, just explain to us what the current position in Northern Ireland is regarding abortion is and what the history is and why it differs from England, Scotland and Wales.
Yes, so Northern Ireland allows abortion only in very limited circumstances where there's a threat to the life or health of the mother, and that is a serious or permanent threat. So it does allow it, but it's fairly tight, and that has led to in the last number of years, somewhere between sometimes as low as 12 and I think as high as 50 abortions a year, and that's left to doctors to decide that, and there's quite tight guidelines. And the main reason for the distinction is that the 1967 Act, the Abortion Act in England and Wales, that allows for much wider circumstances for abortion, wasn't brought into Northern Ireland. It was felt that the people of Northern Ireland didn't want that at that time, and so it's never been the case here. And so that's why we have a different piece of legislation. So our position was a little like Ireland's, I suppose, still technically as before the referendum and before any new legislation. It's slightly wider and there's slightly more circumstances in which it would be allowed.
In terms of just the results here in the south of Ireland, how did you feel about the referendum result? Were you surprised?
Certainly surprised at the scale of it. Certainly the public polling, and I think even private polling and the organisations were running, seemed to suggest it was tightening. I think that was the view actually of both sides in the debate and coming into the referendum. And so I think the sheer scale of it came as a surprise to almost everybody. But I guess then some of the exit polling maybe revealed why, with a lot of people, I think it was 42% saying they voted in favour of change, but they don't agree with the 12 weeks, that was too much, but they didn't see any other option. And so a lot of people saying they didn't want as much change as was coming, but they had voted for it nonetheless. So maybe that explains why so many people supported it.
What was happening then last week in relation to that Supreme Court ruling? Tell us a little bit about what that case was about.
Yeah, so there's a case been going on. Our Human Rights Commission in Northern Ireland brought a case to say that our law wasn't compliant with UN human rights regulations and legislation that had been through the High Court. It said, had sided with the Commission. Our appeal court had sided, gone against them, and then it went to the Supreme Court, so the highest court across the UK. And what happened was ultimately the Supreme Court dismissed the case on a kind of technicality. So they said they didn't have the right to bring the case, and so it was ultimately kind of thrown out. But behind that, they did say, the judges, there was a split decision, but the judges said if they could have heard it, they would, by a split decision, have had great sympathy for the view that our laws around life-limiting conditions and sexual crime were too tight, and they would be minded to recommend change. But they said that's not binding, that's because they didn't have the right to hear the case, and so ultimately it has to come back, and a different set of judges could make a different decision. But we certainly had that indication. So the other thing they clarified, all seven judges agreed, is there's no right to an abortion on the grounds of serious disability. Human rights law does not go that far, and there's no general right to an abortion. That is not something in human rights law. So we've got a clear kind of cutoff and saying, even in serious disability, there's no right to an abortion under human rights law. The only cases they were interested in, the only areas of potential debate, are around life-limiting conditions and around sexual crime. Those two hard cases that in many ways have been used to kind of drive wider change in lots of places, the UK and to some extent I think in Ireland's debate as well.
From a political perspective, Peter, some people might think it's a bit ironic that Sinn Féin MPs won't take up their seats in Westminster, but Sinn Féin's Northern leader Michelle O'Neill has been meeting with Labour MP Stella Creasy, who's pushing the abortion agenda in Westminster. What kind of threat do you see in terms of political cohesion? There seems to be a lot of pressure coming from Westminster.
Yes, there's definitely a lot of pressure. As you say, those signs were put up very quickly. The North is next. Obviously, we don't have a government here at the minute since the Moore Stormont collapsed. And so for some time, we haven't had local rule. and so we can't make those decisions locally at the moment. And then there's a real risk around Westminster. So this is a devolved issue. That means it's one that is supposed to be decided locally in Northern Ireland. And what people like Stella Creasy, a Labour MP at Westminster, are saying as well, if Stormont aren't sitting, we have the right then to make law. And I think that would set a very dangerous precedent. I think it would be deeply unhelpful. I think it should ultimately come back to Stormont. I want to see Stormont up and running as soon as possible. But the danger is that Westminster begin to intervene and they pick and choose certain issues that they want to legislate on, and that we don't think is a wise way to go. So you do get this strange situation, for example, where Sinn Féin won't take their seats but are happy to lobby and engage with MPs. And so we're trying to say to the government, you're best to stay out of this. And the government has said it is a devolved issue and they would rather not interfere.
Peter, on a positive side, for those who have a very strong pro-life view, do you think this could be a positive unifying force in the North for Catholics, Presbyterians, Church of Ireland, Evangelicals and the Protestant community in general?
Yeah, certainly we're involved in a Both Lives Matter coalition, and it's fascinating who's around the table, people of faith and not, Protestant, Catholic, Nationalist, Unionist. This is one of those issues that cuts across some of those traditional boundaries. And so there is a really interesting coalition coming around to say, look, we know that there are 100,000 people alive in Northern Ireland today because we didn't bring in the 1967 Act. That figure was challenged and our Advertising Standards Authority went away and did some work and research, looked at the work we'd done and said, actually, no, that's a robust estimate. That's roughly the right figure. As best we can tell. And so a lot of people coming together and saying, no, this is a moment to say we're doing something a little bit different here in Northern Ireland, and we need to champion and support that. So we have some great coalitions, some great friendships, some great relationships being built around this issue because it does cut across traditional party lines.
Peter Linus, thank you so much for joining us on the programme this morning. Peter is Director of the Evangelical Alliance in Northern Ireland.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.